You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
They call it Sex Week at Yale University. This is Ivy League material, if you ask me. Sex Week at Yale University, that probably doesn't sound too shocking, because some might say that at most universities, every week is Sex Week. What is permitted, what is taught, what is promoted there in those universities. But what is this, and how did we survive so long as a civilization without Sex Week at Yale University? Joining us to talk about it, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How did we survive as a civilization without Sex Week at Yale University?
Well, that is a good question. I tell you what, you know, people used to understand that sex made babies, and so therefore that anyone who had sex was a potential parent, and so therefore you really ought to be married before you have sex. And so therefore, since we don't know any of that anymore, we need to explain it and talk about it. Oh, wait, that's not what they were talking about at Yale, was it? Oh, silly me. I don't know, Todd, how we survived all this time without Sex Week at Yale.
You taught there, and in your time there, did you see the beginnings of something like this, where it would be considered necessary to devote an entire week of the discussion of pornography and of sexual harassment, of contraception, and, by the way, this year, a visit from a porn star?
Well, you know, actually, when I taught there in the early 80s, and no, I have to say I didn't see this coming. I would not have expected this, although I did have students tell me, I do remember one student telling me that if she were gay, she would feel really comfortable at Yale. But I honestly can't say that I saw Sex Week and visits from porn stars and so on the horizon when I was teaching there from 1980 to 1985. Of course, that may be that I wasn't paying attention to that set of stuff, too. Maybe it was all there under my nose and I just didn't realize.
So when a university holds something like this, I think ostensibly what they want to do is, this is about information, this is about making sure everyone understands what the sexual climate is, what sexual harassment is. Have the universities like Yale done anything to make that better?
You know, honestly, I think that is such a scam, you know, to say that the idea is to make people aware of sexual harassment. If that was really what it was about, you know, if you were really trying to create a climate where, you know, there wouldn't be date rape and there wouldn't be sexual harassment, I don't think you'd invite a porn star. I don't think you'd be talking about casual sex in the way that they seem to be talking about casual sex. I mean, you'd have a serious discussion about whether it's a good idea to have sex in a context that is really basically using the other person. And that's what the sexual revolution has taught people to do, right? It's basically said sex is a recreational activity. It's basically a sterile activity. You're entitled to unlimited sexual activity as long as you can find a consenting partner. And if you take all of those things together, what you have is a sense that another person is an object that pleases you or doesn't please you. And the fact that they give their consent to you using them is supposed to make it all okay. And so you have this kind of use and be used culture that really Sex Week is actively promoting. And honestly, I think that's the core thing behind the things they say they're against, such as date rape and sexual harassment and so on. I mean, you'd be much better off saying, you know, no, a person is not the sort of thing that you use, even if they agree to be used. That's just not how you treat people.
How has the sexual revolution actually created this kind of sexual climate on university and college campuses?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting that you ask that, Todd, because I think, you know, the obvious thing that it's done has been to turn sex into a consumer good. So instead of sex being the basic way by which we build community, you know, we build the most basic community of all around our sexual activity, the little baby, the building up of the relationship between the mother and the father, and the new baby that might result from their love. That's what sex is supposed to do. Sex is supposed to be at the heart of the community, of the family. But instead of that, we've turned it into a consumer good focused on the self. And so that by itself would be a problem, I think. But if you add to that the fact that sex has an addictive quality to it, and I, you know, I don't want to get too explicit on the radio here, but I'm sure that most adults listening to me understand that it's very easy to become addicted to sexual activity or become addicted to your sex partner, and that people find it difficult to stop being involved in a sexual relationship or stop being involved in sexual activity, even when they know it's bad for them, that you're not entirely rational around the subject of sex. And so if you get people started, you get people sort of habituated to the idea that they're entitled to do whatever they want, add in the addictive element to it, and people are going to start doing a lot of things that are not good for them, kind of as a byproduct of the whole recreational mentality. And when you're doing stuff that's not good for you and you can't stop, you've got to come up with a good story about why this is all okay. You have to rationalize, you know, because you can't hold in your mind, you know, I'm hurting myself, I'm doing something bad, and at the same time, I can't stop. You know, that combination of thoughts is really hard for people. And so I think no one who brought about the sexual revolution, I don't think any of those people, whatever else they might have been thinking, I don't think any of them predicted how much people would have their thinking skewed by the sort of disconnect, you know, the kind of guilt feelings that you have over being addicted to something that's not good for you and that you can't stop. This is just scrambling people's brains, I think, on the right and on the left. And people just aren't thinking straight. And so because they feel bad, they come up with other things to make themselves feel better. I'm sure the people organizing this think that, you know, having Sex Week at Yale is going to make everybody feel better, you know, somehow going to solve something. And I just don't think that's the case, because it keeps getting raunchier every year from the looks of it.
How does this attitude that we are inculcating in young people, and we are still talking about young people, they may be technically adults, but they are young people. How does that carry over into their adult lives after they leave a place like Yale?
Well, you know, the problem with young people is that immaturity is rampant among the young. You know, I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's true. And so they don't know what's going on. And what we're doing is basically telling them you have to figure it out on your own. And so, the poor kids are saying, oh, well, let's try this and let's try that. And by the time they leave college, they may have a whole series of broken relationships. They may have a whole series of, you know, heartbreaking situations. And so if they want to get married and stay married, which in my observation, most of them do want to get married and stay married, they've been practicing all the wrong things in college by hooking up with somebody, maybe moving in with them in the dorm. They're practicing all kinds of things that will prepare them better for divorce than to prepare them really for marriage. So it's good when you encounter college students who are doing something to try to stem that tide. And sometimes you do see such students.
Do you know anything about the True Love Week that was kind of presented there at Yale as an alternative to sex
work? Yes, I have heard about those kids. There's a group called Undergraduates for a Better Yale College, and they have been trying to be an alternative to the Sex Week, and they're an affiliate of the Love and Fidelity Network, and the Ruth Institute works with Love and Fidelity Network all the time. Matter of fact, I'm going to speak to a Love and Fidelity chapter tonight at Georgetown University, and last night I talked to one at Catholic U. So the kids there at Yale are kind of a hearty band of countercultural radicals trying to make the case that you shouldn't use people, you know, that the sexual using of the other person is always bad for you. Even if the person agrees to it, you know. So I do know something about those kids, and I think they're wonderful. And it sounds like they had a very interesting event there last night.
With only 30 seconds, do we need Sex Week on the college or university campus?
We do not need Sex Week at Yale or at any other school. You do not need a week-long celebration of casual sex. You know, young people figure out that sex is fun by themselves. They really don't need a lot of help for that. What they do need help with is some guidance and limit setting on what is going to be appropriate sexual behavior, and they need some guidance and some support for the idea that that entering into a relationship with the idea that you're going to wait until marriage before you become sexually active, that that is worth doing, and that that requires some planning, it requires some foresight, and the young people who have the have what it takes to make that happen are young people that we really should be applauding, just like these kids at Yale and the kids I'm going to see tonight at Georgetown.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Check out the blog and the website for the Ruth Institute. Just go to ours, issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you again.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, true love. Valentine's is supposed to be all about true love, finding your true love, expressing your true love to one another. When we come back, true love that is couched not in the terms of hearts and cupids, but a martyrdom, the real St. Valentine, after this. In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues, etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc. and you.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
How does Jesus' incarnation provide us with a response to religious relativism? Find out in an article that I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled God in a Box, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Michael Schuerman's journey from moralistic therapeutic deism to the rock-solid theology of the Reformation. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.